I want to preface my sermon today that this is not a solution for a life-threatening moment of psychological or physical abuse. I would encourage you, though, that if these symptoms that I speak about today sound familiar into the extreme and they resonate deeply within you, please reach out to your minister, myself, the authorities, your pastoral care team, or at least a very trusted friend to help you leave and stop that cycle of abuse. I had a friend. For this purpose, we'll call her Katrina. In our reenactment group, Katrina was the least welcome. She was incredibly negative, opinionated, and rather narcissistic. She was the type that when she would walk into the room, all the air would be sucked out. We'd talk to her and tell her how she was making us feel uncomfortable, and she'd curb her behavior for a time, but then she'd go right back on to misbehaving, most of the time worsening her conduct and actions. 2 steps forward, 3 steps back. It was a constant push and pull with her. Personally, our final argument came over a set of dresses. She and I had argued countless of times over the period appropriateness of certain fabrics. And we agreed on a rule that she would not purchase any fabric, trim, or notions for her gowns on her own. She purchased with this very expensive and fine fabric for a new gown, completely approved, and she allowed her mother to make it. It was atrocious. The cut and fit were completely wrong, and the skirt was almost 1.5 feet too short. She was in tears, and she came to me and my husband and begged us to help her create a new gown for a major performance we had coming up, because she no longer trusted her mother. We agreed because we felt bad for her. We made appointments with her over the course of the summer for three times to work with her and the needs of this particular gown. She showed up once, canceled another time, came to the last one refusing to work because it was too hot. My husband sent her home. She was angry. It was his fault. She made appointments with me alone at a mutual friend's house and would show up hours late. It was incredibly frustrating. I did as much as I could without Katrina and her niece, who I was also making a gown for, being present, but I finally gave up. I just couldn't do it. I stepped away from her project to work on my own and to help another in my group who needed me. She became incredibly jealous, and she insisted that she was first. Told her, well, if you make the effort to come to me and get fitted, I can help you and help with the cutting and sewing. We can get this done. She agreed, coming to another friend's home where she supposedly cut all of their pattern pieces out. The week before the event, I was all set to do construction, and I'm left with a dress only half cut out, the wrong way, in duplicate. And I still had a pile of work of my own. I attempted to call her, but she was working. My cat suddenly passed, and I was a wreck. My husband called her and told her that we were not going to be able to complete these gowns, to plan to wear backups, even offering and saying, we'll loan you some garments, and gave my apologies to her. Katrina insisted, no, that's okay, I'll bring my own machine to the event. Please bring all of my nieces and my supplies with you to the hotel, and I will sew them all together. She would bring her backups just in case, with the caveat, my husband told her, you know, John has to approve those, and she said, that's fine. He expected her to do the work herself and told her that I had other stuff to do. She said that was fine. Upon arrival, she claimed that nobody told her to bring a machine and insisted that I finish the work for her. I chained myself to that machine and began the onerous process of finishing 2 gowns to the best of my ability. I was up until 3 a.m. I completed everything but the fastenings and attaching the waistband to her skirt. I showed her what I expected her to finish, and she said she'd do it. I was up all night, only managed a nap of 1.5 hours. I got up, I went and did a rehearsal, I came back to my son sitting by my machine having an anxiety attack because she handed him all of her stuff and told him to do it. I was livid. I took over and I began churning out the work. I still needed to finish my garments, and for the first time in 20 years, I was late to our stage show. Katrina never thanked me. She demeaned me and belittled my work, that I was able to finish, telling me that she should have let her mother, the professional costumer, make the gowns. She became angry at me that I wouldn't let her wear her backups from her mother's costume, her costume rentals, because I had to remind her that polyester lamé was not only unsafe in the heat, they weren't exactly period appropriate for the 16th century. She froze me out for the rest of the event. I was devastated, but I kept my composure. After the event was over, she posted to our guild's discussion group about how difficult her life was and how little money she had for after the event and how disappointed she was that I didn't do a good job on her gowns. She said how stressed she was because her father was so incredibly ill. Then she went on again to say how she should have let her mother, the professional, do the dresses for her, blaming both myself and my husband for sabotaging her. When we pointed out that she herself asked for the help because she no longer trusted her mother to do it, she denied ever saying that. She refused to take personal responsibility. But still, I tried to give her the benefit of the doubt due to her father's illness. I knew he was actually ill and in the hospital, and suggested that she simply take a break from the next event, recoup her financial losses, and focus on her father and her family, and that we can talk after the next meeting. She flew into a rage, ultimately quitting our group, quitting our friendship, and publicly posting her diatribe on social media. She then attempted to involve several event producers, who thankfully didn't give her the time of day. At this point, I asked myself, what am I doing? I had enough. I wished her well. I blocked her from my phone, my social media. I no longer speak to her. I didn't realize how much work she was to have as a friend and how much of the heavy lifting I was doing in our relationship. There are always negative people in the world. Sometimes you have them in your life, and I'm sure you might ask yourself why. I wonder, have any of you had a friend, partner, or family member, or been involved with a job that treated you similarly to this? How did you feel? What was your response? Is that person still in your life? Are you still employed at that business? This type of situation is toxic, and these type of people can be bullies, whether they intend to be or not. Emotional abuse is one of the hardest forms of abuse to recognize. It can be subtle and insidious, or overt and malicious and manipulative. Either way, it chips away at the victim's self-esteem, and they begin to doubt their perception and their reality. In 1979, psychologist Lenore E. Walker coined the term cycle of abuse. She used it to describe the patterns of behavior in an abusive relationship. Other models have been developed from hers, but in this instance, I felt that it could fit. The first phase would be tension building. The second, an incident that would result in acute violence, be it emotional or physical, followed by a reconciliation and a honeymoon phase, and then ending with calm until the cycle started all over again. Abusers are often survivors of or victims themselves. And in the case of those that are emotionally or verbally abusive, they most of the time, again, are not aware of it. In either case, once we recognize the pattern of abuse, we have a choice, we can stop it. Even if that means exiting that relationship for good. I'd like to share with you some wisdom from Buddhism, from an aptly titled piece called The Sermon on Abuse. The Buddha observed the ways of society and noticed how much misery came from malignity? That's an interesting word. And foolish offenses done only to gratify vanity and self-seeking pride. And the Buddha said, If a man foolishly does me wrong, I will return to him the protection of my ungrudging love. The more evil that comes from him, the more good it shall go to me. The fragrance of goodness will always come to me, and the harmful air of the evil goes out to him. A foolish man, learning that the Buddha observed the principle of great love, which commends the return of good for evil, came and abused him. The Buddha was silent, pitying his folly. When the man finished his abuse, the Buddha said to him, he asked, "Son, if a man declined to accept a present made to him, to whom would it belong?" He answered, "Well, in that case, it would belong to the man who'd offered the gift." "My son," said the Buddha, "you have railed at me, but I decline to accept your abuse and request that you keep it to yourself. Will it not be a source of misery to you? As echo begins to sound, the shadow of the substance, so will misery overtake the evildoer without fail." The abuser made no reply. And the Buddha continued, "A wicked man who reproaches a virtuous one is like one who looks up and spits at heaven. The spittle doesn't soil heaven, but it does come back down and defiles the person who was spitting. The slander is like the one who flings dust at another when the wind is contrary, but the dust does not return but to him who threw it. The virtuous man cannot be hurt, and misery and the misery that the other would inflict comes back onto himself." The abuser went away ashamed, but he came again, and he eventually took refuge with the Buddha. So I can break this down in simpler terms, quoting an old elementary school rebuke. "I'm rubber, you're glue, everything I say bounces off of me and sticks onto you." My personal similar response from my spiritual background is, may the universe treat you exactly as you have treated me. Toxic relationships weigh on the soul. They can not only drain you mentally, but also physically. The thing to ask yourself is, one, does this person have my best interests at heart, and is their heart open to receive criticism? Two, do they consistently hurt me with their words and actions? And three, will this person do for me as I have done for them without expectation of adoration? Basically saying, if you do good for them, will they do good for you without expecting some grandiose thank you? If the answers to these questions are no, or at the very least complicated, the chances are you seriously need to examine what you are getting out of that relationship. Now, see, this is the part of the story where I get to admit my minister foible. I got really angry with Katrina. I yelled at her. I lost my temper. I screamed. But what good did it do me? She could care less about the damage she was doing to me emotionally, nor did she seem to value our friendship in that moment. She instead chose to belittle me and my work and attempt to turn others against me. Instead, I mourned our friendship, especially my developing relationship with her son, whom she asked my husband and I to be godparents to. This struck me deeply. My anger didn't affect her at all. Like the Buddha said, the anger just came back to me, making me feel sick and less than. The thing is, mourning the loss of a relationship is just as deep and profound as mourning a death. The stages are the same: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. They won't come in order. Don't expect it. And you might experience them more than once. Take comfort in your support systems, your family, friends, this community, anything really. Don't be afraid to allow yourself the time to grieve. Knowing these phases of grief can help you rationalize your experience and normalize it. It's also important to know that there are no limits to this grieving process. There's no rushing it. Grieving is like digestion. There's nothing you can do to hurry it along. It takes time, and the only thing you can do is just get through it. But take heart in the fact that this, like everything else, will eventually pass. Like Madonna sang during our offertory song, pain is a warning that something is wrong. And perhaps they were simply a lesson you had to learn. There is power in that surrender. There is an extraordinary power in saying goodbye. May it be so.